fact that 100,000 people will come here from 50 states and show
Radio.
Is worth whatever small risks are involved.
Don't you think that both the country and Congress itself is aware of the situation? You read the press today and you read about the demonstrations that have gone on for some time now all over the country. Don't you think they have made Congress aware and the people of the country of the seriousness of this situation? You have to take the
no idea. Well, I don't know if we're on or not, but I'll go on there and start talking, and maybe the intro might come on. You're listening to Jim Lee's Underground Radio Network, 347-838-9825. Here's the call-in numbers, and we're going to be dealing in our second part of the Martin Luther King tribute. I'm going to continue on with the Mike Douglas interview that I had played last week.
This is Ned Brooks.
And then I'm going to go on with some other rare Meet the Press. Meet the Press with him and Roy Wilkins talking about the March on Washington and about situations that's going on and President Day African American Society at the time. Hit it, Ebony.
Charismatic and all that. He just was
Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see
The man you're about to see and hear, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. 3, 4.
I got something, y'all, in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to sing along. Every voice and sing, till it in heaven ring with the harmony. Oh, let us sing, let our rejoicing rise high. Loud as the Georgia.
Partners in Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. All of our services are free. Call 312-328-0873 to get additional information on our homeownership counseling, rental assistance, Cook County foreclosure mediation, and small accessible repairs for seniors programs. PCIB is a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling agency committed to addressing the housing needs of all people. Call 312-328-0873 to schedule an appointment or visit us at www.pcibchicago.org.
For true inspiration, check out singer, songwriter, and radio personality Sylvia Fedrick. Sylvia, your sister under God's construction, brings to you her best in Christian contemporary gospel tunes, and they are available for download at www.sangsyl.com. That's SANGSYL.com. Or you can visit her profile at Chicago Black Business Network. For bookings, call Sassy Michelle at 512-914-4221.
Want to learn the secrets of the wealthy? Do you think that the wealthy sell their gold and silver, or do they buy gold and silver? Learn to create wealth, collect wealth, and preserve wealth for you and future generations. Find out how you can acquire free silver every month. Visit goldandsilverplan.com. That's goldandsilverplan.com. What you don't know can keep you struggling financially. What you know can change your life. Be in the know. Visit goldandsilverplan.com today.
Hey, you want more money in your pocket, right? Savers are losers, unless you save like the rich and beat inflation. The secret? Save the right kind of money. Pure, solid, 24-karat gold or silver for as little as $20 a week, direct from the mint. Don't spend money. Exchange bad money for good money. Start today at SaveMetalMoney.com. That's SaveMetalMoney.com. The chains of slavery in the modern world are not forged with links of iron, but with the bonds of limiting ideas and debt.
Be in business for yourself, but not by yourself. Team up with a company voted the 57th most promising by Forbes. With no money to collect from your customers, no credit checks, and no cost for you to join. Visit electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288. That's electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288.
Hi there, I'm the X-Man, Xavier Paul. I'm a national network voiceover talent. You've heard my voice represent hundreds of brands and businesses for the past 15 years. Well, now it's your turn. I understand how important it is to promote your business or event in the right way. That starts with quality radio spot production and the nation's top voiceover talent. You might wonder, how do I get started? What's the best approach? What voice talent do I use? And most importantly, can I do it affordably? That's why I created CoolVoiceRadio.com. I take you to the finish line, giving you everything you need to advertise effectively on the radio. I'll help you create your concept, write your spot, even choose your music and cast your voice talent and get it aired on the radio. Now that's cool. Email me today at info@coolvoiceradio.com or call 646-326-7800 because nothing beats the right sound.
Okay, people, I'm just going to kick it with the Mike Douglas interview, and then I'll play some rare interviews from Meet the Press. Hope you all enjoy. I'm taking calls within the top of the hour. Thank you very kindly for listening in tonight.
Later that year, Dr. King brought his anti-war message to the Mike Douglas Show, where he defended his views against some surprisingly tough questions from the affable host and an equally unlikely adversary, singer Tony Martin. Here is Dr. King in his historic appearance, which seems remarkably relevant after 40 years.
Tony, our next guest is the winner of the Nobel Prize for Peace and perhaps the foremost spokesman for the nonviolent faction in the American Negro civil rights movement. His recent speeches and sermons urging Negroes not to fight in Vietnam have initiated a verbal argument among prominent Negroes that threatens to split the civil rights movement wide open. Would you please welcome a very outstanding and controversial gentleman, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I said to Dr. King, I ought to put you right in the middle. I wasn't thinking. You've been put in the middle quite often,
right.
Haven't you?
That's very right.
Dr. King, why did you decide to urge Negroes not to fight in Vietnam?
Well, I think my view has been a little distorted at that point. I haven't only urged Negroes not to fight. I feel that the war is so unjust, so abominable, so futile and bloody and costly that nobody should be fighting there. I haven't limited my concern to just the American Negro, although I know we are dying in disproportionate numbers there, and we are on the losing end both there and at home, because as long as the war in Vietnam continues, social problems will inevitably suffer here at home.
Well, don't you think that your remarks have created doubts about the Negro's loyalty to his country?
Well, some people may feel that. I don't think our loyalty to the country should be measured by our ability to kill. I think our loyalty to the country should be measured by our ability to lead the nation to higher heights of democracy and to the great dream of justice and humanity.
You honestly feel, Dr. King, that the war in Vietnam could be stopped now without harm to this country?
Well, there are two ways to deal with it. One is a unilateral withdrawal. I don't oppose that because I feel that this is a possibility. After all, France withdrew unilaterally from Algeria, withdrew without a military victory.
Mm-hmm.
And this did not lessen France's prestige or influence in the world. If anything, it increased its prestige
in the world. But France is not the power that this country is.
But I think that's an even greater reason why we should restrain our power. There's always the danger that any nation will abuse its power. And I think our power must be much more than military power. We don't need to prove to the world or anybody our military power. I think we've got to prove our moral power.
Do you feel that this nation has abused, their power?
Oh, I certainly do in the war in Vietnam. I have no doubt about that. I'm not saying that it was done with evil motives in mind. I think we made a huge miscalculation. And when you make a mistake, you ought to confess it. One of the great things about President Kennedy was that he said to the world, to his closest advisors, that he made a mistake in the Bay of Pigs invasion in Cuba. And he said, I never should have listened to the experts. And I think the time has come now for our leaders to say that we've made a grave mistake in Vietnam and we ought to take the initiative in bringing an end to this conflict, if not through a unilateral withdrawal, at least through a negotiated settlement. And I think there are things that we can do to create the atmosphere for negotiation.
You know, Dr. King, my first question, when you said you didn't say it was inaccurate, but you said it was a misunderstanding that you didn't advise just Negroes not to fight in Vietnam. But I think it was interpreted that way. Now, how about the heroic Negroes already in Vietnam? Don't your remarks belittle their accomplishments?
Oh, not at all. I have nothing but admiration for the bravery of those who are engaged in the kind of sacrificial and suffering situation that they are in. I'm not dealing with their particular situation in terms of fighting. I'm trying to do something, trying to lead us somewhere that will bring an end to what I see as a terrible and a very tragic war, which is damaging the image of our nation here and abroad.
That's it. May I ask you a question?
Yes.
Don't you feel that perhaps the parents of the boys who are now currently in the operation in Vietnam might not be in amity with your civil rights movement now because of your...
I doubt that. I doubt that very seriously. I can't overestimate the amount of discontent in the Negro community over the war in Vietnam. I haven't seen any loss of support in the Negro community.
I don't mean just in the Negro community. I mean there are many, many of the Caucasians who are with your civil rights movement as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering if you're not disingratiating yourself, how you feel about those who have their sons in Vietnam now.
Well, there again, I think two things are important here. First, I think that the things that I'm saying and the things that I'm trying to do and all of the people in the peace movement are trying to do are really geared toward bringing the boys back home. In other words, we are trying to prove to be their best friends by doing something to bring about the climate that will bring an end to this war. Secondly, anyone who is committed to civil rights would not withdraw that commitment as a result of someone in the civil rights movement taking a stand against the war in Vietnam. And if they do, then they were not with it in the beginning. You stand up for what is just because it is just and right. I think it was T.S. Eliot who said, there's no greater heresy than to do the right thing for the wrong reason.
That's right.
And a lot of people do the right thing for the wrong reason. And I submit that anyone who would stop supporting civil rights because of a stand against the war on the part of some leaders ended up doing the right thing for the wrong reason. They were never truly committed to civil rights in the beginning. Truly committed to civil rights in the beginning.
Dr. King, Carl Rowan, our former ambassador to Finland, has said that your statements against Negro participation in the war have, and I quote, alienated many of the Negro's friends and armed the Negro's foes. Now, what is your comment on that statement?
Well, I'm sorry to have to disagree very vigorously with Mr. Rowan on that. I go back to the same statement that people who have been alienated as a result of this stand against the war were alienated anyway. Many people supported us in civil rights when we were in Selma or Birmingham because they were against the brutality of a Burl Connor or Jim Clark, and they were deeply outraged about these things. And they supported us because they were against that brutality, not because they were for genuine equality for the Negro. And if anybody's been alienated, it's been because they were really not absolutely committed to the ideal of genuine equality for the Negro. And any little excuse that comes along, they will use that. But the basic thing is that they were not committed anyway.
This equality for the Negro that you mentioned, how much longer are the Negro people willing to wait for this equality, which is certainly due them?
Well, the mood in the Negro community, as you know, is a mood of great disappointment and despair and even bitterness as a result of the slow pace of progress and as a result of the fact that in some instances things have gotten worse, particularly in the economic area. And I think the impatience is very deep and the discontent is very broad. And if something isn't done with haste to remove the intolerable conditions that exist in our communities all over the nation, then I see us sinking into darker nights of social disruption.
Dr. Tony, do you believe that your remarks have put a strain on the relations of the civil rights movement? You believe so?
Well, not really. As I said, many people, white and Negro, are deeply opposed to the war in Vietnam. Interestingly enough, when I first spoke out against the war, only 21% of the American people were against it. Both the Gallup and the Harris polls reveal now that the majority of Americans are against the war in Vietnam. Some 48% are now opposed to the war in Vietnam. 10% remain undecided. And you have about 42% who are still in favor. So you have a majority opposed to the war in Vietnam. And I haven't seen the great opposition to my position that so many people would state. The other thing is that a man of conscience can never be a consensus leader. He doesn't take a stand in order to search for consensus. He's ultimately a molder of consensus. And I've always said that the ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of conflict and moments of convenience, but where he stands in moments of challenge and moments of controversy. And I would take this position even if I didn't have the majority of people agreeing with me now.
Using your feeling about unilateral and the way France settled, which was very well done, they didn't lose face. Apparently, face is the important thing at this time. But not only are we losing face, but it would be better to save lives. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
Who will be the GOAT if someone takes upon themselves to end this war and settle it unilaterally? Will there be a constant complaint, what a big waste this was? Will this set a precedent for the United States in the future of defending our inheritance, our independence?
Well, I think we have to look at several things here. First, in my mind, peace is much more important than face. And I think there has to be a transformation here in terms of our thinking. And in terms of peace, we've got to come to see now that peace must not only be a goal that we talk about and seek, but a means by which we arrive at that goal. The other thing is this, that even though the mood of the country may not be in line with the unilateral withdrawal now, I think there are things that can be done to bring about a negotiated settlement. Now, there are many people who have talked very closely with the leaders of North Vietnam and the National Liberation Front, who tell us if we bring about an unconditional halt in the bombings, this would get talks going. Our government has refused to do that. And I feel that since we took the initiative in escalating the war in the air and on the land and on the seas, then we have a moral obligation to take the initiative to de-escalate it, and I think we can do that by bringing about a halt to the bombings. And our security
is involved. Do you think that would do it, by halting the bombing? Would that do it?
Well, as I said, I can only go by men like you, Taunt, the Russian leaders, and many other people who have talked very closely with the leadership of North Vietnam and the National Liberation Front. I think we ought to try it anyway. I think we ought to bring about an unconditional halt to the bombings. And we should do that for practical reasons in terms of trying to get talks started, and I think we should do it for moral reasons. They are never going to negotiate as long as we are bombing their territory.
How about your relationship with President Johnson? Have you lost favor with Mr. Johnson?
Well, I guess the president would have to answer that question. I have taken a position against the administration's policy, and I would hope that the president means what he says when he says that there should always be room for dissent. And we come to a tragic period in our nation when we equate dissent with disloyalty. I believe firmly that it is necessary to have these moments of dissent in order to challenge something that may be leading the whole nation down the wrong path.
Do you care if you have lost favor with Mr. Johnson?
Well, that isn't I guess the most important thing to me, the important thing is that I not lose favor with truth and with what conscience tells me is right and what conscience tells me is just. I'm much more concerned about keeping favor with these principles than keeping favor with a person who may misunderstand the position I take.
We will talk further with Dr. Martin Luther King following these messages. We'll be right back. Dr. King, if I may, I found this in this morning's paper. Negroes hail results of Dr. King's policy. Berkeley, California, more than 4 out of 5 American Negroes believe the nonviolence of Dr. Martin Luther King has done the most to help their race, a study reveals. But about half of the same Negroes interviewed for a University of California study believe riots have done some good. Findings, which include interviews with 1,119 Negroes, were released in a book titled Protest and Prejudice. Author Gary T. Marks, now assistant sociology professor at Harvard University, reports the majority of Negroes seem to direct their hatred and anger toward the system of evil and those who support it, not indiscriminately against all whites. Can you comment on that article?
Yes, I'm very interested in hearing that. I hadn't read the article, and I hadn't read the book. In fact, I wasn't aware of it. But I think it is true that the vast majority of Negroes feel that the best way to resolve the problem is to work through peaceful, nonviolent means and militant nonviolence, but not through violence. Now, on the question of whether riots have helped, I've taken the position that riots are socially destructive and self-defeating, and therefore I have to take a stand against it because of my deep commitment to nonviolence. On the other hand, I do think a riot is the language of the unheard. And America has failed to hear, for instance, that the plight of the Negro poor has worsened over the last 10 or 15 years. I think it has also failed to hear that large segments of white society are more committed to tranquility and the status quo than to justice and humanity and equality. And in that sense, I think the riots have called attention to something. Not that they have brought about social transformation, but they've called attention to a very serious problem in our society. But I couldn't say that they have been helpful in the sense of really bringing about structural change. I haven't seen any basic change that has come through riots. The changes that we have made and the changes that we've seen over the last 10 or 12 years have come through powerful watershed nonviolent movements.
Well, have the militant leaders taken over the civil rights movement, in your opinion?
Well, there again, I think a poll like this reveals that most Negroes are still following the leadership of those who feel that the problem must be worked out through nonviolence. After all, riots have been engaged in by a very small number of Negroes, and you think of the fact that there are some 22 million Negroes in the United States. Now, when you use the word militant, I think it is possible to be militant and yet nonviolent. I think I'm militant. Militancy means persistent, to be demanding, to be insistent. And I think it's possible to be militantly nonviolent. And these, I think, are going to be the leaders who will lead us through this very tense period of transition.
What do you think of the approach of this Soapy Carmichael and the H. Rapp Brown?
Well, naturally, there are philosophical disagreements I have with both Mr. Carmichael and Mr. Brown. But I always have to say...
Have you discussed these disagreements with them?
Oh, very definitely. I know them very well.
Do they agree with you?
We work together in the movement a good deal, and I'm sure they would disagree with me on a number of things.
In other words, they're not too friendly with you sometimes.
Well, that's quite right. But in answering the question about them, I always go beyond them because I think they are products of the problem rather than causes of the problem. And I always have to think of the fact that it's very easy to take our visions from the causal basis, from the root of the problem, and see the consequence out here and begin to major on that. Neither Rapp Brown nor Stokely Carmichael created slavery. They did not create slums. They did not create unemployment or underemployment. They did not create segregated or qualityless schools. And they didn't start a war in Vietnam. These things were started by other forces in our society. It was Victor Hugo who said once, "Where there is darkness, crimes will be committed. The guilty one is not merely he who commits the crime, but he who caused the darkness." And I think we have to admit that these men didn't cause the darkness. They are the products of the darkness,
how
and this is their bitterness.
How about their following? Do they have a growing or important following among American Negroes?
Well, I would say among the young population, there are those who are listening more to Mr. Carmichael and Mr. Brown. I wouldn't say that they have a large following. I still think it's a minority. But if conditions do not change, if they are not made better, and if programs do not emerge that really go all out to get rid of the deprivation surrounding the life of the Negro, then they will probably have a greater appeal.
What will this do to the power of Dr. Martin Luther King at that point?
Well, I never like to discuss Martin Luther King's influence for fear that that is suggestive of your modesty. I'm just trying to do a job, and I think it's a job that has to be done, and I'm not trying to do it merely for myself or merely for my children or merely for the Negro, but for America, because I think it's true that if this problem isn't solved, the soul of our nation will be lost, and the only way to redeem the soul of America is to remove or to eradicate racism in all of its dimensions.
Dr. King, in the past you've been accused of having communist sympathies, and since your stand has to help the communist cause, aren't you concerned that these allegations will be revived?
Well, they are always revived. I hate that McCarthyists tend to live with us. But I don't really worry about this. I know my own views too well.
Are you a communist?
Absolutely not. I have never been. I am not now, and I never will be in terms of the philosophy of communism. I happen to be a Baptist preacher, and I don't think you'd find too many Baptist preachers who would be communist. I think communism is based on a metaphysical materialism and a kind of ethical relativism and a crippling totalitarianism and a denial of certain human freedoms that I consider basic, First Amendment freedoms that I consider so basic, that I could never be a communist or prefer the communist way of life. But I do feel that we've got to recognize the fact that communism is in the world, and we're going to either have to have peaceful coexistence or violent co-annihilation.
Dr. King, we have certainly appreciated your stopping by today. We have enjoyed this visit very much. And
thank you
so much.
Delighted.
Enjoy meeting you. We'll be right back.
Yeah, that was Dr. Martin Luther King on the Mike Douglas Show. He was heavy hitting, boy. He ain't back down for nothing. Notice how he didn't sell out when they tried to get him to throw Stokely Carmichael and A-Trap Brown under the bus. Nah. Be back in a minute, everybody.
And now, the mellow sounds of Jimmy Irvin.
Never meant to make you cry. You were the only one I've ever loved in my life. And though it's hard for me to show it, I've got to let you know it. 'Cause darling, I love you more each day. But the word got in my way.
Can't do it no more. I can't sing no more sad songs. 1, 2, 3, hit man, bop the bop, bop it out of bebop, bop the bop, yeah, bass man, come on up. 1, 2, 3, hit man, sound good, yeah, saxophone on the floor. 1, 2, 3, hit it. We'll be right back. time for a man to be a man, take back his smile. I gotta do something to shake things up. I like Johnny Mathis, but I can't do that stuff. Jimmy got soul, Jimmy got soul, Jimmy got S-O-U-L, soul. I can't do rock, I can't do roll. What I can do, baby, is show my soul. Jimmy got soul, Jimmy got soul, Jimmy got, Jimmy got, Jimmy got.
Yeah, I'm about to kick it to a rare Martin Luther King interview on Meet the Press, everybody. Part one. Five parts.
Ladies and gentlemen, we invite you to Meet the Press, the unrehearsed program which has won every major award in its field. Our guest today is Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the originator and leader of the passive resistance movement among Negroes in the United States. In just a moment, Dr. King will Meet the Press. Now, Meet the Press, produced by Lawrence E. Spivak. Remember that the questions asked by the members of the panel do not necessarily reflect their point of view. It is their way of getting the story for you. Now, here is the moderator of Meet the Press, Mr. Ned Brooks.
Welcome once again to Meet the Press. For the past several months, a new strategy to end racial segregation has been spreading through the South. It takes the form of sit-in demonstrations by Negro students against segregation in public eating places. It is part of a broader campaign of nonviolent resistance led by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., who is our guest today. Dr. King is a Baptist minister and head of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, which is spearheading the passive resistance movement. Dr. King first attracted nationwide attention in 1956 when he led the boycott against segregation in public buses in Montgomery, Alabama. His activities have resulted five times in his arrest, and his home and his church were bombed. Early this year, Dr. King moved his base of operations from Montgomery to Alabama to Atlanta, Georgia. He is 31 years old. He was born in the South, educated for the ministry in the North. And now seated around the press table, ready to interview Dr. King, are Frank Vanderlinden of the Nashville Banner, May Craig of the Portland, Maine Press Herald, Anthony Lewis of the New York Times, and Lawrence E. Spivak, a regular member of the Meet the Press panel. Now, Dr. King, if you're ready, we'll start the questions with Mr. Spivak.
Dr. King, former President Harry Truman recently said this, and I quote, "If anyone came to my store and sat down, I would throw him out. Private business has its own rights and can do what it wants." Now, former President Truman is an old friend of the Negro, I believe. Now, isn't this an indication that the sit-in strikes are doing the race, the Negro race, more harm than good?
No, I don't think so, Mr. Spivak. First, I should say that this was an unfortunate statement, and we were very disappointed to hear the former president of the United States, make such a statement. In a sense, a statement like this serves to aid and abet the violent forces in the South, and even if Mr. Truman disagreed with the sit-ins, he should certainly disagree with them on a higher level. Following his past record, it seems to me that Mr. Truman wouldn't have faced such a situation because there wouldn't have been a segregated store in the beginning if he were running it, according to his statements in the past. Now, I do not think this movement is setting us back, making enemies. It's causing numerous people all over the nation, and in the South in particular, to reevaluate the stereotypes that they have developed concerning Negroes so that it has an educational value, and I think in the long run, it will transform the whole of American society.
Well, now, you have yourself have said that the aim of your method of nonviolent resistance is not to defeat or to humiliate the white man, but to win his friendship and understanding. How successful do you think you have been or are being in winning the friendship and understanding of the white men of the South?
Well, I should say that this doesn't come overnight. The nonviolent way does not bring about miracles in a few hours, in a few days, in a few years, for that matter. I think at first, the first reaction of the oppressor when oppressed people rise up against the system of injustice is an attitude of bitterness. But I do believe that if the nonviolent resistors continue to follow the way of nonviolence, they eventually get over to the hearts and souls of the former oppressors. And I think it eventually brings about that redemption that we dream of. Of course, I can't estimate how many people we've touched so far. This is impossible because it's an inner process. But I'm sure something is stirring in the minds and the souls of people, and I'm sure that many people are thinking anew on this basic problem of human relations.
Well, Dr. King, you speak of your movement as a nonviolent movement, and yet the end product of it has been violence. You've also called upon the white people of the South particularly to live up to the law as the Supreme Court has interpreted. Don't you think you would have more standing in your fight if you yourself, if you called upon your people to live up to the law rather than to break the law and to risk jail in this sit-in?
Well, I would say two things to that, Mr. Spivak. First, the end result has not been a violent result. I would say that there has been some violence here and there. But the nonviolent resistor does not go on with the idea that there will not be any violence inflicted upon him. In other words, he is always willing to be the recipient of violence, but never to inflict it upon another. He goes on the idea that he must act now against injustice with moral means, and he feels that in acting against this injustice, that he must never inflict injury upon the opponent, but he is always prepared to absorb the violence which emerges, if such violence emerges in the process.
But aren't you urging him to break the local laws when you're asking the white people to live up to the law? And is this a good method of procedure?
I think we will find that the law of the land is a law which calls for integration. This has been affirmed by the Supreme Court of the nation, mainly in the 1954 decision outlawing segregation in the public schools. It made it palpably clear that separate facilities are inherently unequal. So that in breaking local laws, we are really seeking to dignify the law and to affirm the real and positive meaning of the law of the land.
Mr. Lewis.
Dr. King, in connection with the sit-in movement and other aspects of the racial question, there has certainly been an increase in tension in various parts of the South, what Mr. Spivak was speaking of, regardless of the motivation. During the last week, the New York Times has run some stories about Birmingham, Alabama, suggesting that a kind of reign of terror is taking place there with the officials on the side of those terrorizing those who believe in racial equality. Now, my question is, what role do you see for the federal government in this situation? Do you think the federal government has a place to play in, say, Birmingham, or in connection with your sit-in demonstrations?
Yes, I do. I think the federal government has the responsibility of protecting citizens of this nation as they protest against the injustices which they face. I also feel that the executive branch of the government should do more in terms of moral persuasion. The legislative branch should certainly do more in giving the proper legislation so that the transition will be made in a much smoother manner than we are facing now.
Well, we've just had a civil rights bill passed. You speak of the legislative branch. I wonder what you think of that and what more you would have had Congress do.
Well, I must confess that I was disappointed with the final bill because so many things that I felt were basic happened to have been deleted or omitted. And the whole question of school integration, I'm convinced that the nation, the federal government, will have to face it in a much more forthright and courageous manner than it has in the past. And by omitting this section of the bill, I think we face something very disappointing. Even in the area of voter registration, I think there is much more that can be done. Now, the bill that we have, which is mainly in the area of voter registration, will help, particularly in some communities. But it is not at all a panacea. It has certain red tape, complex qualities about it, which will still make the process a long one. And I think ultimately the federal government should set forth a uniform pattern of registration and voting so that no citizen will have a problem at this point.
You spoke of the executive branch also and moral leadership being needed. What precisely would you have the president do, President Eisenhower or his successor?
Well, Mr. Lewis, I think there are several things. Certainly the president can do a great deal in the area of executive orders. He has certain executive powers where orders can be made and the country must follow it and comply with these orders. On the other hand, that is a great deal that a man as powerful as the President of the United States can do in the area of moral persuasion by constantly speaking to the people on the moral values involved in integration and urging the people to comply with the law of the land.
Mrs. Craig.
Well, Dr. King, there have been court decisions saying that a storekeeper can select his customers. Are you saying that the end justifies the means and you're apparently breaking local laws, hoping for a better conclusion?
Well, I would say first that the Supreme Court has not rendered a decision at this point. It is true that there have been other decisions. But I think on the basis of the 1954 decision, if the Supreme Court follows what it set forth in 1954, it would have to uphold the law in this area, that segregation is wrong even in lunch counters and public places, because that decision said in substance that segregation generates a feeling of inferiority within the segregated, and thereby it breaches the equal protection clause of the 14th Amendment. Now, I'm sure that if we follow this through in this area, the same thing will follow. On the other hand, if you're saying, are we breaking laws because we feel that the end justifies the mean, we feel that there are moral laws in the universe just as valid and as basic as man-made laws. And whenever a man-made law is in conflict with what we consider the law of God or the moral law of the universe, then we feel that we have a moral obligation to protest. And this is in our American tradition all the way from the Boston Tea Party on down. We have praised individuals in America who stood up with creative initiative to revolt against an unjust system. So that this is all we are doing. In our institutions, we give the Boston Tea Party as an example of the initiative of Americans. And I think this is an example of the initiative and the great creative move of the young people of our nation.
But Dr. King, this is a nation that lives on the law. Above the Supreme Court is graven equal justice under law. Are each of us to decide when it's all right to break a law?
I would say that when, as I said a few minutes ago, Mrs. Craig, when the law of our nation stands in conflict with the higher moral law, and when a local law stands in conflict with the federal law, then we must resist that law in order to dignify and give meaning and the full outpour of the federal law and the moral law.
But, sir, we have Congress to change a law. We have the courts to interpret the law. Are you going beyond them?
Well, we have discovered that in any nonviolent movement, you have a way of direct action. In many instances, the courts have made for slow movement, so to speak. As one attorney general says, we are prepared for a century of litigation. we have observed the sometimes hypocritical attitudes in Congress and the slow movements there, the apathy, so that this is a direct action approach. And the whole aim, the end result, will be to arouse the conscience of those who are using these stalling and delaying methods to block our advance.
Mr. Vanderlinden.
Dr. King, in your own book, Stride Toward Freedom, you say you thoroughly studied the writings of Karl Marx and the teachings of communism, and you don't agree with everything that the father of communism said. But you do say this, and I quote from page 95 of your book, insofar as Marx pointed to the weaknesses of traditional capitalism and challenged the social conscience of the Christian churches, you responded with a definite yes. Now, I'd like to know just where does communism or collectivism fit into your program of resistance here?
Well, it doesn't fit in this particular program of resistance at all. I have made it crystal clear on many occasions that I feel that communism is based on an ethical relativism and a metaphysical materialism that no Christian can accept. I do not feel that the end justifies the means, because the end is pre-existent in the means. And I believe firmly that we must follow moral means to secure moral ends. So that that particular quotation does not apply to this particular struggle. I was referring to something else altogether.
Well, sir, you said also in your book on page 220, our ultimate goal is integration, which is genuine intergroup and interpersonal living. You also soft-pedal as so-called irrational fears that this program might lead to racial intermarriage. You say that marriage is an individual matter. Now, is it correct to say that you don't oppose racial intermarriage?
Well, I would certainly say, properly speaking, individuals marry and not races, and therefore I cannot, I would not at all say that there should be laws prohibiting individuals of other different races to marry, because this is an individual matter. It is not a matter of a group marrying another group, but an individual marrying an individual.
You then attack next the state laws against such intermarriage?
Well, I haven't planned a particular attack on that, but I don't think America will ever come to its full maturity until every state does away with laws prohibiting individuals to marry on the basis of race. But I think basically this is an irrational fear, because it is an individual matter. And I think the question here at bottom is a question of illicit miscegenation. And if you will follow the record there, I think you will discover that illicit miscegenation has existed more in the South, where you have had rigid segregation laws, than it has existed in the North, where you don't have such barriers. It hadn't been the Negro who was the aggressor at this point. If we just need to look around and we can see that.
Mr. Spivak.
Dr. King, you say that the Negroes have a moral right to occupy the restaurant seat. Now, you've had a Supreme Court edict on the school integration. Would you say that your children, the Negro children, have a right to occupy the seats in classrooms too? And would you consider that form of nonviolence?
Well, I'm sure that Negroes have this right on the basis of the Supreme Court to go into schools. I haven't thought through the strategy at this point, how nonviolent resistance can apply in the school integration struggle. I do think it can apply, and I think we need to think through some of these methods. The main thing is that the methods must always be nonviolent, and they must always be based on the principle of love. But the specific application, I'm not prepared to say at this time. I do know that we have that right on the basis of the decision from the Supreme Court.
Wouldn't you be on better ground, both legal and moral, if you occupied school seats than by occupying a few restaurant seats?
I'm not sure about that, Mr. Spivak, because I think we have an economic factor involved here, and even if one denied the legal aspect, the legal right to do it, that is a deeper moral right. As Governor Collins of Florida said, it is a blatant injustice to welcome individuals into a store at all other counters but the eating counter. This is a blatant injustice, and it is very unfair, so that we have not only legal rights involved here, but also moral rights.
But wouldn't you be on stronger grounds, though, if you refused to buy at those stores, and if you called upon the white people of the country to follow you because of both your moral and your legal right not to buy?
I think, Mr. Spivak, sometimes it is necessary to dramatize an issue because many people are not aware of what's happening. And I think the sit-ins serve to dramatize the indignities and the injustices which Negro people are facing all over the nation. And I think another reason why they are necessary and they are vitally important at this point is the fact that they give an eternal refutation to the idea that the Negro is satisfied with segregation. If you didn't have the sit-ins, you wouldn't have this dramatic, and not only this dramatic, but this mass demonstration of the dissatisfaction of the Negro with the whole system of segregation.
Mr. Lewis.
You just had a strategy meeting in Raleigh, North Carolina, Dr. King, on this whole question. And I noticed that one speaker was quite critical of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, speaking of it as too conservative and too slow-moving. Do you share that view? And just what was the feeling at the strategy meeting? What was the conclusion, that you've got to move more quickly than you have been?
Well, I should say first that I didn't hear a speaker say make that particular point, so that I can't speak on that, whether the speaker said it or whether he didn't say it. I heard all of the speakers and I didn't hear that. I didn't find any anti-NAACP attitude at the strategy meeting. All of the leaders from the South, the Southern Sit-In Movement, assembled there, and they assembled there with the awareness of the fact that the NAACP has given absolute support to the sit-ins. And the NAACP has made it very clear that this is a good movement, a positive movement, that it will support throughout. Now, there was some criticism, not of the NAACP, but of the snail-like pace of the implementation process, the implementation of the Supreme Court's decision, and dissatisfaction with the conniving methods and evasive schemes used to avoid following the law of the land. This isn't a criticism of the NAACP. It's a criticism of the agencies and the courts that will use the law to delay and get it bogged down in complex litigation processes.
Mrs. Craig.
Dr. King, I have been told that there are places in Harlem which refuse to serve white customers. Do you know if that's true? If so, do you justify it as either morally or legally right?
I'm very sorry I didn't get the first part of it.
I say I understand there are places in Harlem, in New York, where they will not serve white customers. Do you know if that's true or not?
I'm very sorry I do not, Mrs. Craig.
I have been so told.
I don't know of places in Harlem that will not serve white customers. If such places exist, I think it's a blatant injustice and just redevelopment of the thing we're trying to get rid of. So I certainly wouldn't go along with that.
Mr. Vanderlinden.
Dr. King, how many white people are members of your church in Atlanta?
I don't have any white members, Mr. Vanderlinden.
Well, sir, you said integration is the law of the land and it's morally right, whereas segregation is morally wrong and the president should do something about it. You mean the president should issue an order that the schools and the churches and the stores should all be integrated?
I think it is one of the tragedies of our nation, one of the shameful tragedies, that 11 o'clock on Sunday morning is one of the most segregated hours, if not the most segregated hours, in Christian America. I definitely think the Christian church should be integrated. And any church that stands against integration and that has a segregated body is standing against the spirit and the teachings of Jesus Christ, and it fails to be a true witness. But this is something that the church will have to do itself. I don't think church integration will come through legal processes. I might say that my church is not a segregating church. It's segregated, but not segregating. It would welcome white members.
I think at this point I'll have to interrupt. I see that our time is up. Thank you very much, Dr. King, for being with us. This is Ned Brooks inviting you to Meet the Press.
Meet the Press, America's press conference of the air and winner of every major award in its field, is a public affairs presentation of NBC News.
Our guests today on Meet the Press are the heads of the two major groups participating in the March on Washington this Wednesday, Mr. Roy Wilkins and Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Mr. Wilkins is executive secretary of the oldest and largest Negro organization, the NAACP. Dr. King, who is president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, has become a symbol of nonviolence in the civil rights movement. We'll start the questions now with Lawrence E. Spivak, permanent member of the Meet the Press panel.
Mr. Wilkins, there are a great many people, as I'm sure you know, who believe that it'd be impossible to bring more than 100,000 militant Negroes into Washington without incidents and possibly riots. What do you see as the effect on the just cause of the Negro if you do have any incidents, if you do have any rioting?
I don't think there will be any rioting. I don't think 100,000 people just assembling is cause for apprehension about a riot. The city of Washington has accommodated much larger crowds, and nobody has talked up in advance the possibility of violence. But of course, if there should be violence, and we've taken every precaution to see that there is not, it might have an effect on the public's attitude toward the civil rights movement.
Mr. Wilkins, what gains do you think you can make as a result of this march that will outweigh the risks you take? And there are risks you're taking.
We don't regard the risks as being that great, and we think the gains are immeasurable, because we will bring to the capital of the nation, to its proper place, and to the Congress of the United States, the deep concern of millions of Americans over this question, concern which has been shown in the local demonstrations, which has erupted and been shown in city councils and state legislatures, and which needs to be brought to the Congress, because, as you will recall, the Congress passed in 1957 the first civil rights law in 82 years. We think it's time they should pass a lot of laws, and we think the fact that 100,000 people will come here from 50 states to show by their presence that they believe that this legislation should take place is worth whatever small risks are involved.
Don't you think that both the country and Congress itself is aware of the situation? You read the press today, and you read about the demonstrations that have gone on for some time now all over the country. Don't you think they have made Congress aware and the people of the country of the seriousness of this situation? Do you have to take the risks you're going to take in order to emphasize it?
Mr. Spivak, I don't believe the Congress as a whole has been as responsive to this situation as it should have been. A great many congressmen have been sensitive to it, and a great many senators. But there is evidence that they still believe we can do business on the civil rights front in the same old way.
One more question. What are your latest estimates of the crowd that you expect on Wednesday?
Well, I'm contenting myself with saying more than 100,000. I'm unable to say whether it'll be 110,000, 145,000, or 190,000. But I will say it'll be more than 100,000, and I personally tend to be a little conservative.
Our guests today are two of the leaders in the March on Washington on Wednesday, Mr. Roy Wilkins and Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. You've just met Lawrence E. Spivak, permanent member of the Meet the Press panel. Our other reporters today are Frank Vanderlinden of the Nashville Banner, Robert McNeil of NBC News, and Richard Wilson of the Coles Publications. We'll continue the questions now with Mr. Vanderlinden.
Dr. King, the vast majority of the demonstrators who will be here on Wednesday undoubtedly believe that they are sincerely aiding the cause of jobs and freedom as advertised. However, many people are afraid that some of the people involved in the movement may have other motives, and some of those fears arise from the fact that the deputy director of the march, the man who is credited in Life magazine with being the one who thought it up in the first place, is named Baird Rustin. Now, according to the congressional record of August 13th, Rustin admits that he is a former member of the Young Communist League, and there's other evidence that he attended the 16th National Convention of the Communist Party as an observer in 1957. I have a copy here of the statement of the observers. And in the same year, he made a speech in New York defending the so-called democratic reforms in Poland, a communist country. You know Mr. Rustin very well, since he was your secretary for 5 years, from 1955 to 60. I'd like to ask you, do you feel confident that he is qualified in every way to lead this movement?
I think Mr. Rustin has made it palpably clear that he has no sympathy for the communist philosophy, and he has no involvement in the Communist Party or any communist cause, for that matter. He has made that clear, and I am convinced that it is true. He renounced any convictions that he had on that point many, many years ago, and I do not think it is quite fair to raise the issue, as many are trying to do at this hour, because he has rendered real service to the civil rights struggle over the last few years. I would say that Mr. Rustin will render good leadership, but he is not one of the chairmen of this march. He is a part of the march in the sense that he is deputy director, but he is not one of the chairmen. He is just a part of a great movement, and I think the many people who are working in the march, the many organizations that have endorsed it, the many institutions and individuals have endorsed it, have all faith that it will be in the deepest tradition of American democracy.
And sir, you state that this was some time ago, but the Un-American Activities Committee of the House has issued a very recent report showing that as late as March 14, 1962, the same Baird Rustin spoke at a meeting for the Medical Aid to Cuba Committee, which was organized ostensibly for the purpose of raising money to send supplies to Castro's Cuba. That was only a year ago. Do you still stand by your statement that he has no connection with any of these people?
Yes, as far as I know. And I think I can be safe in saying that I am absolutely convinced that Mr. Rustin has no connection with any communist organization, and he has no views that are in line with the Communist Party. Now, I cannot speak on that particular issue because I'm not familiar with it, but I'm talking now in terms of his general views that I have heard him discuss publicly and that I have discussed with him. I think Mr. Rustin is as committed to American democracy and as committed to the ideals of democracy as anyone at this time.
I understand.
Let's go to Mr. McNeil.
Mr. Wilkins, the march on Wednesday is the psychological climax of a movement that's been crescendoing for many months. What do you plan after Wednesday?
Well, after Wednesday, of course, will be the follow-up on the crescendo, as you say, that has been developing. It will be immediately addressed to the task of getting legislation through the Congress, and then it will proceed, as it must proceed, on all local and state levels to the elimination, step by step, or sweepingly, as the case might be, of remaining pockets of discrimination, even while we wait for legislation from the Congress.
There will be
one other aspect, of course.
And that has been developing all along. And that is to guide and direct and instruct and inspire the Negro population to take part, that is, in a sense of responsibility, in the newly integrated society. And this is going forward, contrary to a great many critics.
I was wondering how you were going to maintain the militancy of your followers after having brought them to such a pitch as this march will achieve, without making it difficult to keep them nonviolent.
Mr. McNeil, our people are coming to Washington to show their government how deeply they feel about this matter. And they're not coming here to stage violence or to put on any stunts. They intend to go back from this place, which is, as you say, a peak, but only a notification of their national government. They intend to go back to their home communities and continue in the same tempo on the same goals that are there in each of the states and the cities and localities in which they live.
Is there any likelihood that the joint leadership of this march will fuse into a single civil rights movement instead of the where you are now broken up into several different groups?
I don't anticipate any actual fusion. I anticipate continued cooperation, collaboration, but I don't see why we should be expected to fuse into one monolithic organization when no other group or no other interest in this country has done so. All have their separate organizations.
Except that it's been usual for groups of people with one main aim to pursue that aim as single groups, at first, anyway.
I won't go into it here, but I think I could challenge you on the vivisectionists, for example, and various sects of various other movements. But just say that we intend to cooperate, the leadership and the groups, and to keep our eyes single to the goal at hand without actual physical fusion.
Oh, the tape stopped right there. Okay, so I walked away. Well, I'm going to go in there and freeze it up right there and try to put up the next part. But that was my leader, Martin Luther King. And for Wilkins talking about the march on Washington, just a little historical breakdown of someone's birthday who was yesterday. And we're going to deal with somebody's birthday who is also today. My girl Leah, celebrating the 33rd. We're going to do a little celebration to her. Be back after this little commercial break, everybody. 347-838-9825, Jimmy's Underground Radio Network.
Partners in Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. All of our services are free. Call 312-328-0873 to get additional information on our homeownership counseling, rental assistance, Cook County foreclosure mediation, and small accessible repairs for seniors programs. PCIB is a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling agency committed to addressing the housing needs of all people. Call 312-328-0873 to schedule an appointment or visit us at www.pcibchicago.org.
For true inspiration, check out singer, songwriter, and radio personality Sylvia Fedrick. Sylvia, your sister under God's construction, brings to you her best in Christian contemporary gospel tunes, and they are available for download at www.sangsyl.com. That's SANGSYL.com. Or you can visit her profile at Chicago Black Business Network. For bookings, call Sassy Michelle at 512-914-4221.
Want to learn the secrets of the wealthy? Do you think that the wealthy sell their gold and silver, or do they buy gold and silver? Learn to create wealth, collect wealth, and preserve wealth for you and future generations. Find out how you can acquire free silver every month. Visit goldandsilverplan.com. That's goldandsilverplan.com. What you don't know can keep you struggling financially. What you know can change your life. Be in the know. Visit goldandsilverplan.com today.
Hey, you want more money in your pocket, right? Savers are losers, unless you save like the rich and beat inflation. The secret? Save the right kind of money. Pure, solid, 24-karat gold or silver for as little as 20 bucks a week, direct from the mint. Don't spend money. Exchange bad money for good money. Start today at SaveMetalMoney.com. That's SaveMetalMoney.com. The chains of slavery in the modern world are not forged with links of iron, but with the bonds of limiting ideas and debt.
Be in business for yourself, but not by yourself. Team up with a company voted the 57th most promising by Forbes. With no money to collect from your customers, no credit checks, and no cost for you to join. Visit electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288. That's electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288.
Hi there, I'm the X-Man, Xavier Paul. I'm a National Network voiceover talent. You've heard my voice represent hundreds of brands and businesses for the past 15 years. Well, now it's your turn. I understand how important it is to promote your business or event in the right way. That starts with quality radio spot production and the nation's top voiceover talent. You might wonder, how do I get started? What's the best approach? What voice talent do I use? And most importantly, can I do it affordably? That's why I created CoolVoiceRadio.com. I take you to the finish line, giving you everything you need to advertise effectively on the radio. I'll help you create your concept, write your spot, even choose your music and cast your voice talent and get it aired on the radio. Now that's cool. Email me today at info@coolvoiceradio.com or call 646-326-7800 because nothing beats the right sound.
Yeah, January 16th, 1979. The true hip hop vocalist. Everybody wants to give it to Mary J. Mary J is funky with a hip hop soul blues rhythmic funk sound. But how can you forget the princess? Not Ciara, not Jasmine, not Keisha Cole, not Beyonce, but Aaliyah. Happy 33rd, Aaliyah. Happy 33rd. Somebody down here missing you.
America.
Try again. be waiting there with my trunks, my low, my high, just so I'm low key. If you tell the world, oh boy, see, I'm trusting you with my heart, my soul.
Who should be here? season. Maybe the much, maybe the abuse. Now tell me what the reason. Stupid you, lose better season. So cut the crying, cut the coughing, cut the weeping, girl. Cut the blaming, cut the naming, cut the seeking, girl. I think you need some prayer, better call a deacon, girl. So get your act right, or else we won't be speaking, girl. So what's it gonna be? Me and you, or is it gonna be? Who blames who? I'm tired of these things, I'm tired of these scars. I think I'm gonna give me a drink. I'll call you tomorrow.
Girl in your life, I'm the one you call on, and I need to know.
Right on time. That was two mixes we got. The first mix we played, we got that from DJ Cool from Flint, Michigan, out the Housequake crew. And the second one, that was from DJ Jaha from Jersey. Tomorrow's New Music Thursday. You can join us at New Music New Music Thursday at Twitter. That's NU Music Thursday at Twitter. And you can send your music to Jimmy's Underground Radio. We got some new music being played by Uwap, The Troopers, some new Jay Shine, and we got some new Pat Galeo. Is that any Pat Galeo? Yeah. Tune in tomorrow and check it out. But here's the number one cut, everybody.
Dwayne the Rock on the track. Feel it.
Yeah. Good look. Good looking out on the track, the Rock. Know how we do. Fuck these niggas, they can't be serious. Chuck D, gotta say it like it really is. Fucking stuff with cheese like a Philly is. Make more money than all your affiliates. Even them Ukrainian niggas is feeling this. A big city pimp, pull it out and drill a bitch. 8 bank accounts and I ain't even got a wife. I'm at the malls all day like I ain't got a life. Walking out with 10 bags, get your swagger right. And without money, I couldn't imagine life. Broke niggas, I pay y'all to smash your wife. You're dead, say my name, it's the afterlife.
Martian, I'm dancing with the stars while I'm swimming where the sharks been. I'm feeling high.
money with me. Let's go. For them niggas that get no sleep, trying to get that paper up, sleeping on the team, but I bet that money wake them up. Got me sucking so hard, marriages is breaking up. So if I ever get it, then it's best you don't stay with her. But that money is the mission, bitch. No two chains, but I'm riding around and getting it. PSP, we in the shit, trying to roll with us, nigga. You gon' need a membership. Out here going hard like it's no tomorrow. And I ain't stopping till your boy get all tomorrow. Go wrist watching it, don't tick tock. Road to the riches, we ain't looking for a pit stop. Hip hop, what I spend to get that money right. 100 nights I remember doing the hungry life. Now the money coming like the women when you fuck her right. No days off, so you know I'm up at night. How do you make your feet? Rizzy racks where I get.
This one. The cutest fucking thing about rappers on your playlist. The late nights in the studio with racist. Rappers don't want to feature on your playlist. But you're still not trying to get the hustle on. Pushing songs and pushing tapes with the music on. Track clips getting bigger with a good song. Run the fuck, get that mind, you switch on. The sound pack original's a great song. Using imitation, try to find your inspiration. It's not mean like a fucking feature pattern man. Money talks and all bullshit walks, huh? Bad songs are me and never accessible. Working hard.
Yes, they taking part of some side of me. Truth is, people who do not acknowledge me really ain't nowhere as hot as me. These beats bleeding, look at it like you just studied sodomy. I treat names like they the shit, but they do not see the psychology. Truth is, in the pudding, I'm putting up.
Again, my mic was off. My fault, everybody. It's in and out stuff. Listen, my mic was off. Good night. May God be with you for real. Thank you for listening to my tribute to Martin Luther King. Thank you for listening to my tribute to Aaliyah. It's my third time playing it because I thought I said it three times because my mic was not on yet. And I'm going to say it again. Maybe I got the Beyonce jinx, but nobody can do you like Aaliyah. Nobody can do it like you. No Beyonce, no Sierra, no Jasmine, no nobody.
Give it up, we gon' show you how we party. Give it up, we gon' show you how we party. Give it up, we gon' show you how we party.
like girls jump for a trick. Don't fuck the next man, keep that Lindbergh dick. Up in the cut, like barbers in haircut. I'm black with Indian, my race should be mutt. I cut with razor blades, play space with unfinished. Evaluate the trap, take heat, a freaking genius. Up in the sky, up high, don't puff lie. Do you grow crack, fam? Prepare, you gonna die. One crazy joke, my name is Crazy Flow. You thought I had eight, but I got 10 more. Off beat and on beat, old school like Beat Street. I think like top seat, make sweat with no heat.
I'm up on this track like Pam Grip. And movies I heat up the beat like water in a jacuzzi. I fly to L.A., then come back to Virginia, then call Maggie New to see he's got some tender. Then back to the crib to pick up my brother D. G, don't forget to bring the house key. Hops at the 850, now here we go. Please, please, brother, don't slam my car door. It costs too much money to get that shit. I need all my money to pay my bills with. Don't have no time for the shucking and jiving. Peep my rhyme, cause that's off time.
I'm in the Marriott, the place to get got. After I smoke, he sticks me like shot. Funky like fart, connect tongues like God. They his lollipop, this kid named Scott. Me, my hot self, myself.